This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
But why don't we start rapid fire? There's so much going on with some thoughts on each of these huge stories. So we begin first with the Deebo Samuel trade. The Commanders shipping a fifth-round pick to San Francisco for the 29-year-old who's entering his seventh season, a Pro Bowler and a first-team All-Pro in 2021. That year, he went for 1,400 yards. Washington is going to pay him the full freight of his $17.5 million salary this year, fully against their cap. The 49ers, as I said, take on $31 million in dead money moving forward. But Danny, it's a one-year deal at under $18 million, and all they had to give up was a fifth-rounder for a long-established weapon who could help their offense.
You do that sight unseen. Now, there's a slight decline last year in terms of his production. Is that injury-related? Is that he was maybe out of shape, a little bit overweight? Was that because of the injury? You don't know. Even if you get last year's production, that's worth it. What you're hoping is that it's better. You're hoping that's an angry Deebo. You're hoping that's the motivated, rejuvenated, full healthy offseason, you know, get in the lab and, you know, get yourself back in the best shape of your life, hire your private chef, all the stories that we've read a million times. If you get the, call it the B-plus Deebo over the last three, four, five seasons, kind of the average there, that is a coup. I mean, that is a boon. You do that 100% of the time, sight unseen, a fifth rounder just for this year. Now then the variable is, do you extend him? Do you make him play for the contract? How's that going to go? I'm not even worried about that. A fifth rounder, which is usually maybe special team Sam, maybe it's a linebacker that maybe makes the team or not. Please and thank you. That's a weapon. That is a threat. Even if you get last year's production, that is a win. So obvious.
Deebo is oft injured, so you got to deal with that, and that'll happen here in Washington because it's just been part of his career. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I mean, the production's been down. Last year, he was down almost 2 yards per catch from the previous season, and he had his lowest catch per game total that he'd had as an NFL receiver, right around, I think, 3.5 catches per game if you play it out over, you know, 17. But he was still number 2 in the NFL last year in yak per reception. Yards after the catch per catch. That's his game.
And that's what they need, yeah.
He is violent. He is physical. He is hard to tackle in the open field. He is not going to go down without a fight. I always call it the cage fighter receiver. Pierre Garçon wore those, fang mouth guards, and he wanted to get into a fight every single time he caught a pass with whoever was trying to tackle him. That's Deebo Samuel. So I really don't understand the contempt here. Where is the derision coming from? Like, if you are one of these people who doesn't like this trade, I need to hear from you and know exactly what your problem is. It's a one-year flyer on a potential really helpful player for a fifth-round pick. And I am a valuer of picks like a lot of people listening are. I like draft picks and building through the draft. There is a big difference between a round one pick and a round two pick and a two into three. And the gap for me, like the big fall off in tiers, is probably after the third round, but it's certainly after the fourth round. When you get to the fifth round, to me, that's closer to a seventh round pick than it is a second or third round pick. So to give up a five for the possibility that you get big time help from Deebo Samuel, when you're taking a one-year flyer on a motivated guy who's in a contract year, I love this. I absolutely think that this is brilliant by Washington. Even if it doesn't work out, you chalk it up as a small L, can't be a big L. That's what I like about it. There will no gigantic loss here. You got a ton of cap space. You're not going to use all of it anyway. It's sub $18 million against your cap, which for a legitimate weapon is a nothing burger at the receiver position at this point. That's basically half of what Ja'Marr Chase is about to make, Justin Jefferson money, right? And on top of that, this is a team that was in the same role using guys like Olamide Zaccheaus and De'Ami Brown and Noah Brown last year. You mean to tell me you're not interested in kicking the tires and seeing what Deebo Samuel can do? As long as there's no extension coming, Danny, and this is what I've said since we started talking about this 3 weeks ago, if they extended him, I'd feel different. I don't think they're going to. I think he plays the year out, trying to prove to everyone that he's still a baller and get a bunch of money next year. And if that's the case, then what he wants and what you want,
they line up.
Work
like a zipper.
Harmony.
Yep. He averaged more yards than anybody else on the roster, save Terry McLaurin, in terms of receiving. That's, and especially if you consider there are a couple of games that he played that are going his games log where he wasn't a factor. He was injured. He was a decoy. Didn't get any targets, maybe one or two over the course of those games. There's a couple of those. So in terms of when he was Deebo, 13, 14 games. Now, again, the injury is a concern. Injuries are a concern with him. He's going to get beat up. He's like a big post player back in the day that in order to stop him, you got to foul him. He's going to get hit. He's physical. He's tough. He's going to run into some contact. He's going to miss some time, et cetera. Maybe you don't give him as many carries to try to keep him healthy that way. It's Cliff Kingsbury's call now. However you want to use him, let's do so.
I think you got Deebo, you use Deebo, and you
fair enough.
Run him into the ground, so to speak, and see where it gets you.
So, again, everyone other than Terry McLaurin, he's pretty much averaging more yards per game. For a fifth-round pick, if you're upset about that, again, I don't get it. This is not, they didn't sign him to a 5-year deal at max value. They didn't pay him what you're going to pay T. Higgins. Maybe you do eventually if he balls out, if he's great for you. But you're under no obligation. You're taking on this year what you want, a playmaker opposite Terry, to make things easier for this offense as their schedule is going to get more difficult in terms of opponents. To give Kingsbury more toys, more guys that make this offense easy. Take a little and make it a lot. One guy could do that last year. That was Austin Ekeler. Now you have two. That's better. I don't see the downside here. Yeah, he might miss some time. Maybe that's it. But so did Noah Brown. You know what I mean? Like there's nobody here that was so great that you're now going to be superseding. There was nobody that showed you, oh, you got to give blank all the touches that are going to Deebo Samuel. No, thank you. Give them to him.
It also doesn't block you from going and adding more weapons at
totally.
Receiver or more of a traditional wide receiver on the outside because – again, the money is not that crazy. It's not like you extended him and he's some now $26, $27 million AAV guy. If they want to go get a traditional wideout that just lines up on the outside along the sideline, flanked out all the time, you can still do that because Samuel can move into the backfield and he can move into the slot. And you can move him all over the place. Not that that's a Kingsbury strength, moving guys around, but it's something that I think you've got to do to get the most out of him this coming season. And I also feel better about this too, and I think people should, based on the familiarity with Deebo Samuel that the general manager who pulled off the trade has. And that's Adam Peters, who was there when they drafted him in San Fran, worked with him. I would have some questions that I would need ironed out about Deebo as a teammate, character stuff after he's trying to fight a kicker on the sideline after a couple of misses last year. But Adam Peters knows the guy, knows the player, has more intel into this transaction than probably any executive that could have made it in the league in making a swap and making a deal with John Lynch. And he's excited about it and wants to add him. So I'm not doing a, in Adam I trust thing where I just never ask any questions and I'm not a critical thinker. I don't think that way. But I do think his intel here and interest in Deebo Samuel should give you a little more confidence that it's going to work out.
I think it's well put. And again, if it doesn't, that this is the process. Like, this is what I want, right? If you're going to trade for, I'm making this up. If you trade a boatload for Myles Garrett and he falls off and Cleveland knew before you did, that's a disaster. The worst this can go is he doesn't play well, and then you go like this. Ta-da, all done, right? Yep. I mean, there's very little downside here for me.
Yeah, worst case scenario, he gets hurt a bunch. It's kind of a disastrous year, and you overpay him for a season, and you lose out on a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, fairly well.
Whoops. Mm-hmm. Worthwhile every time for the possible benefit of a weapon that is maybe scary in this offense.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
On the Rude Guest Hotline is Jacob Chychrun, who's got the third highest goal total of all the defensemen in the National Hockey League. And as we told you last week, we are giddy to announce that he'll be with us each and every week, every Wednesday, for the remainder of the season, providing trusted insight from a trusted insider. This is all presented by our friends at IT Cadre, where DC Sports Insiders share their exclusive perspective. Jacob, last time out, Monday night, you guys got a massive win in a shootout, snapping a 3-game losing streak. Wasn't pretty the entire way. Gave up a 3-goal lead, gave up a couple of leads, but you finally got that 2 points and that win that's been eluding you. Take us back to Monday night.
Yeah, Willie led the way there with the Gordie Howe hat trick, so we were happy for him. Obviously, a big night for our group to get back in the, you know, in the win column. And I think we still feel like we, you know, have another step to take as a team. That game wasn't necessarily perfect by any means, but we'll take the positives from it and try to continue to get better as a group as we, you know, get closer to playoff time.
Yeah, Jacob, you guys have been so unbelievably good this year that it just feels so out of the ordinary. It's your first three-game schneid of the season. When it's not going as well for you guys, kind of what's the difference, things you can point to, and you know, how big a nice step forward was last night?
Yeah, I think, we like to use is predictability. I think when we're playing, it makes it easier to make reads off one another and support each other all over the ice. I think, you know, when we start to overcomplicate or pass or hold on to pucks a little too long, it makes it harder for, you know, guys to make reads off one another or be on the same page. I think, we're at our best when we're defending hard and getting pucks behind their D and getting on a forecheck and generating ozone time. You know, I think that's a big part of today's game is spending more time in the ozone than D zone. And, anybody that does that on a consistent basis is going to have success. So that's sort of, a big thing we find was kind of lacking a little bit. Just guys, you know, not being on the same page and not playing predictable for one another. So, we'll have to get back to that, you know, kind of brand of hockey that we play that has worked all year for us.
Jacob Chychrun, a top three scoring defenseman in the National Hockey League, one of the most important capitals. We are thrilled to be having him on the show every single Wednesday for the remainder of the season, presented by IT Cadre. Going to be a great partnership here moving forward. Hey, Jacob, how about the opportunity to play Ottawa? I mean, I know that's not the only team you've played for, right, in the NHL, but you were there for a couple of years. They trade you this offseason. I don't know if that was something initially you're excited about or not, but straight up for Nick Jensen, who's in the lineup for them, going back a couple of nights ago as well. So what's that like when you are playing your old mates and trying to kind of prove that, hey, you shouldn't have traded me?
It's always fun playing against the guys. I mean, you build great relationships with all your teammates that you've had the privilege to play with. So it's always special, you know, being able to see the guys and compete against them. Obviously, you know, Arizona and Ottawa now Utah are kind of the two teams that I, you know pretty much the whole group. So, those are fun games. I think, fun to go out and compete and obviously they're both teams that are finding their way. I think they're both teams that are, competing really hard to make the playoffs this year. And they're both right there, which is nice to see. I mean, for a long time, that wasn't the case for both those teams. And I think there were some frustrating years for most of the guys on both those squads. So, you know, I'm happy to see both of them be in the hunt at least. Those are just fun games, like I said. So it's always nice playing against, old teammates.
I always hear guys in the league talking about the group text, in the locker room, because you guys are all so tight-knit that a bunch of you are going to go out and get steak or whatever. So I'm wondering, when you get traded, how quickly do you get dropped off the group text? Or do you have to do that yourself, or you just kind of wake up one morning and you've been removed? Like, how does that work?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think you get a notification when you get dropped, so it's not.
You're just
like,
gone. You just don't hear from them anymore.
I got no notifications.
I mean, the majority of the group texts are for our team services guy to let us know of any updates to the schedule and stuff like that. So obviously, I think the team services guys are usually the guys that are taking you off those team threads. Like I said, I don't think you get a notification when you're dropped. You just get one when you're added. So I guess I don't know exactly when it happens, but I imagine they try to do that pretty quickly. And guys will sometimes send a text, a goodbye text, if they you know, if they before they, you know, if they do drop out themselves, they'll maybe send a text before doing so. Just to, you know, have one last farewell. But yeah.
Jacob Chikrin with us here on Grant and Danny, part of his weekly installment with us going forward. Jacob, you were a baseball guy growing up, right? You played baseball?
I did, yeah. I loved it.
So I want you to imagine when you were a kid, let's say you got a fastball in the inner half and you ripped a double to the right center field gap. Then the next time up, you homered. I would imagine a pitching coach might say, hey, stop throwing him there. That's what I would have told Ottawa last night on that catching glove of Logan Thompson. Try somewhere else in the goal, man. That thing was magic last night.
Yeah, it's good good eye by you. I mean, I thought the same thing, and I talked to some of the guys on Ottawa after the game, and they were saying the same thing as well. They just you know, couldn't believe how good his glove was last night. So, yeah, when he's seeing the puck, he's more often than not saving it, and I think his glove was – obviously pretty elite last night.
Jacob, I am a fan of three-on-three overtime. When it first came to the league, I actually thought it was the greatest thing in sports. But I will say, as much as I'm a diehard NHL fan and I'm wearing a Caps hoodie as we talk now, three-on-three to me has become just such a possession game where it's kind of lost the luster. Like, I still love it. I'll take it over five-on-five. But, like, last night, you guys win the draw. And I just want you to keep the puck. And I think it was until Mikey shot about a minute and 40 later that you kind of were dropping back to the neutral zone. You're going back as far as you need to. You're slingshotting backwards. Do you like where we're at now with three-on-three, or would you implement a rule? Like, I want to see something where either you can't leave your own offensive zone or you can't get past neutral ice going in the wrong direction. Like, what's your thought on that?
I don't know. I think – it's funny. I think the coaches are usually the ones to blame for that. They don't want the high risk run and gun style. I think when it first came in, you saw every night it was like it's either a breakaway or two on one. You know, it's just down and back. It's just back and forth the whole time. But I think that usually tends to give, you know, coaching staffs a few heart attacks. So they tend to want to get it a little bit more possession based and a little less risk. So I think that's why now you see it a little bit less run and gun, but, I don't know. I still enjoy it. I think it's fun. You know, it depends. I think there's some times where it opens up a bit and it is run and gun, but you know, for the most part, it is quite possession based now. Our guys just don't want to give up much. So, I don't know about any rules going forward, but I know that was talked about. But I don't know. I think maybe just leave it as is and let the guys go.
Speaking of possession, Jacob, you're so gifted stick handling wise and jumping up into the play on offense. How long does that kind of take for you and your you know, defensive pairing, or maybe a forward that's got a pinch back to cover for you now? Like, how long does that take to kind of make it intuitive for them to maybe understand what you might want to do when it's aggressive time?
Yeah, I mean, that's just something we talk about. You know, you got to cover for each other, and you know, it's all about generating offense once you're in the ozone. So we want our, you know, D-men all being active, and the forwards know that, and they know, you know, when we're trying to generate and create, they need to back us up. So it's just everybody being on the same page and making sure you're filling in for one another.
Jacob Chikrin with us on Grant and Danny. Hey, we got a heavyweight bout last night. Tom Wilson going at Brady Tkachuk. I guess Tkachuk really came at him after Willie took a shot from Claude Giroux. But I saw Willie in the dressing room after the game said he got a text from Mikey, kind of suggested he wanted some fireworks, which is fun. What'd you think about that? That's two big dudes throwing fists right in front of the bench last night.
Yeah, obviously entertaining. I just think Willie's always ready to bring a spark for us when we need it. And yeah, it's just, you know, those are two big guys going at it. And, you know, Brady's a really big boy. And obviously Willie's, you know, been doing that for a long time and just a really strong guy. So, yeah, glad none of them got hurt. It's always fun to watch. And, it definitely brings a spark to the group. So, good on them for doing that for their teams.
HockeyFights.com's got you down for four fights in your career that I'm seeing here. You got Phillips, We got a good one with Braden Schenn here. Landeskog, sound about right? Four fights, none since 22?
Yep, that sounds about right.
When's the next one?
My dad always told me it doesn't pay enough. I mean, he had to do that for his career. And he wanted all us young kids growing up to play with the puck. And, you know, I think he knew that that was a much easier way to make a living. My pops told me there was a lot of restless pregame naps, knowing who he was going to have to go toe-to-toe with that evening. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for the guys that make a living doing that. It's not easy. And, you know, I think for me, I'd rather just have the puck on my stick and make plays out there.
Yeah, keep
but
doing it.
I'm always willing to stick up for a teammate when it's in need.
Have you turned any fights down, and what's the protocol there?
Turned any down? I mean, I don't know. I obviously don't have a reputation for dropping the gloves, so I don't think anybody's really coming after me asking unless I do something or, you know, whatever the case may be. But, you know, usually if you tend to make a dirty play, you're going to get asked to answer the bell. But for the most part, you know, it doesn't happen too much. So,
well, Jacob, we're fired up to have you on the show for the rest of the season each Wednesday. We're going to have to figure out, though, what the intro music's going to be for your segment. Do you have a band or a song that you really like that we could play to kick off the segment out of the break each week?
How about you guys surprise me, and I'll give the thumbs up or thumbs down. Maybe we'll have to change it up each week until you find a good one for me.
I like
won't give
that.
Any hints.
I like that. Yeah. You could grade our choice. Give us an idea just of your favorite type of music so we know what lane, what you know, aisle
I'm
to
a country
shop on.
Country guy, for sure.
All right, good. We will mix it up, and then you'll give us the approval or the denial, and we'll settle on our sweet spot.
All right, guys. All the best. Thank you.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to the Rude guest hotline right now. Welcome onto the program. Our buddy, Jay Gruden. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Jay, the longtime play caller in the National Football League, former head coach here in D.C. What's up, Jay? How you been?
I've been great. How you guys been doing?
Good, buddy.
We are kicking it. So I wanted to get you on to talk Deebo Samuel. First of all, the haul that San Francisco gets back, if you want to call it that, what was given up? Washington takes on a little under $18 million in cap space next year or this coming season for Deebo, and they give up a fifth-round pick. Thoughts on that as a return or an amount to give up for him?
I love the trade. I think it's good for both teams, really. I think it's better for Washington. It gives Jade another weapon, a guy that can catch the ball in short areas and make big plays after the catch, a guy that's physical, a guy that can block. I know people don't want to hear, hey, I got a receiver that can block. No, it's kind of important, especially with the offense that he runs. He do the jet sweeps, the reverses, get the ball in his hands. He make things happen. You know, he's not a guy that is going to catch 85, 90 balls for 1,800 yards or anything like that, but he's going to be a great role player. He's going to have significant production, and it's going to really help out Jade and make the game easier.
Yeah, to your point, Jay, a lot of folks we've heard from were grumbling a little bit about maybe what he can't do, maybe not taking the top off the defense or running certain routes. To me, I'm focused on what he can do. Go into that. How would you use him?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, there's certain things that, you know, certain guys don't do. I mean, this is not a top taker offer. That's okay. We have Terry McLaurin who runs 4-3. He can do that. And maybe get another guy. This is a guy that can line up in the slot. He can line up anywhere. He can catch the perimeter screens. He can block for the perimeter screens. He can do the jet sweeps. He can do the arounds. He can line up at running back, play running back. Most importantly, he catches the under routes when he's in zone coverage. If he finds holes in zones, he splits them. He makes great runs after contact. He's physical. He's dependable. I like his game a lot. I know he's been hurt. He slowed down a little bit, but I just think for the role that I think Clip's going to use him in, I think he's a perfect fit.
Would you, if you were Washington, be worried at all about the weight issue, if we want to call it that in air quotes? You know, where he gained a little bit of weight last season, was out of shape?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think there's going to be a lot to that. I think Debo knows that he's got a year left on his contract to make something happen for himself financially in a big, big-time way. He can't be 20 pounds overweight. He won't get anything. You know, I think it's a big year for him, and I think he's going to be motivated to come in and make a lot of things happen. I'm not worried about his weight. I'm more worried about his injuries. I think the medical team and the training staff have to do a really good job to make sure he's taken care of. I think Dan Quinn will do a good job throughout the year to make sure he gives him plenty of time off to make sure he's healthy, because his style of football is a physical brand now. He's got to have some time off, make sure his body recovers so he can play at full strength on Sundays.
Would you try to think about doing some kind of program like they kind of did with Eckler, or maybe limit his touches or limit his reps? I mean, it didn't work perfectly with Eckler, but the idea made sense to me because you want him for the long haul. Would you think about doing something like that, or it's, we got Debo, I'm going to use Debo?
Yeah, during the week, I think you will, but I think on game day, unleash him. I think still the way Jaden plays and the way Cliff calls plays, it's not like he's going to be the feature player on every play. He's going to be maybe the second or third option. He'll be the first option on a jet sweep, so the reverses or the rounds, whatever you call them. But for the most part, I expect him to get, you know, 5, 6, 7 touches a game, and those will be possibilities for big plays. And then I might only be 4 or 5 yards, but it'll be positive plays. But I think moving forward, you use Debo like you use Debo, not like Debo was used in 2021, where he's a running back half the time and had all that production. I don't think he's going to be quite that big a role, but I think there is going to be a pretty good role for him.
I want to go deeper into the fit in the passing game. I'm just so excited about him in their screen game. And some of the stuff around the line of scrimmage you were talking about, I think everybody in the league runs a ton of like these mesh concepts now where they get these rubs. But like to me, that's Debo's wheelhouse, where he's got a full head of steam, he catches the ball, and he gets up the field. And Washington ran a ton of that, you know, a yard or two downfield this past season. I don't know how unique that is, that he's a fit in that for them. But like, how would you use him, and what do you make of just the schematics of it?
Well, you're right. I think pro football's come to that. A lot of that stuff, a lot of the, you know, the shallow crosses, the mesh plays, like you talked about, a lot of the bubble screens, the release screens, the tunnel screens, the, you know, the jet sweeps, all that stuff is a major role in pro football now. And you got to have people that can do it. I know that Washington last year had OZ and a little bit of Crowder did it, a little bit of Austin Eckler did it, but this guy's a different guy. He can handle all that stuff, and that's a huge package to have. And then you pull that stuff out, and then you got play actions off of it, and then, you know, not to mention in the running game, he's going to help because he can dig out safeties, he can block corners, and go out and crack linebackers or crack defensive ends because he's a big physical guy. He's a jack of all trades. He can do it all. You know, you may not be able to run a 4.3 40 anymore, but he can do a lot of things that a receiver needs to do to be productive in this offense.
Jake Gruden with us here on G&D. So what would be the compliment to him now that he's a compliment to Terry? Like, what would sort of round out this receiving core perfectly for you?
Well, if you're going to run a 3-receiver set, then Terry's a great compliment, and you got Debo. I'd like to see another guy maybe with some wheels that can really run. I don't know what they're going to do with Deami Brown. I don't know if they have it in the house. I'm not sure Luke McCaffrey's that guy, but I think they get a guy in a draft, a guy that can really, really run. I'd like to see that. Terry can run, obviously, but to get one more guy that can run, add another physical presence, maybe another tight end. The big thing, they got to get the tight end situation right, whether it's Zach Ertz or somebody in a draft or what have you. I think that's an important position they need to fill right now. And maybe one more back that can really strike fear in some people. But as far as a receiving core concerned right now, I think the three they have on contract, McCaffrey, Debo, and Terry, are a pretty good start right now.
So we'll get to the tight end and the running back in a second with Jay Gruden, who's joining us on Grant and Danny. But I want to ask you about Davante Adams. Got cut by the Jets today. Danny and I were just discussing him. For the record, I'm not interested. Danny has legitimate interest in bringing him in here. He's 32 years old. I just think, you know, you got a lot of mouths to feed at that point. He's a guy that demands the football. Would you think he'd be a fit in any way?
Yeah, I probably lean towards no on that one. I think there's major needs where money has to go, especially on the defense, tight end, like we mentioned before. I think they got to really address the secondary, make sure what they're doing with Jeremy Chinn and obviously Frankie, the defensive end, the pass rusher Fowler, obviously the middle linebacker Wagner. They have some issues there. They got to make sure they take care of before they add a 32-year-old receiver. I mean, Debo's a great player. He's a great Swiss Army knife. He can do it all. I think that's a start at the receiver position. They'll obviously address it, maybe free agents. The problem with free agents, there's not really a lot of great ones left. You know, you got, you know, Godwin's hurt, Diggs is hurt. You know, Hopkins is a little bit older. Deontay Johnson stinks. You know, Darius Slayton, I know he's excited about that. Keenan Allen's a little bit older. Joshua Palmer's a little bit older. That's why I think getting Debo is a huge deal for them, because the cabinet is pretty empty when it comes to receiver free agents. I think they're going to have to get one in the draft and hopefully re-sign Deami. I think Deami did some good things other than fumble late in the year. I think he played well at the end of the year. So hopefully they get him back.
And so your point, Jay, about the free agent market is kind of my point as to why I'm interested in Adams. I wouldn't go over the top. I wouldn't win some crazy bidding war and I'd let someone else do that. But my point is that it's going to be hard to add talent. And maybe if you don't buy in the receiver class this year, as a lot of folks don't, I'm no expert on it, obviously, but just the way folks are writing, there may be one or two guys that goes in the first round. Are you going to really be able to, you know, upgrade the talent that way? That's why I'm saying I'd at least kick the tires. Give me your reaction to that.
Yeah, no, if they signed Devontae, I wouldn't be upset. I mean, I'd be surprised a little bit, but Devontae could still play. He had some good games down the stretch for the Jets last year. He could still run the good routes and do some things effectively. I just think, I don't know. I just don't see that happening. That's all. Realistically, I don't see them going out and getting Devontae.
There's also a financial element too, right?
Financial element. Yeah. I just don't see that happening. If they got them, great, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's talk tight end then. Level of interest in bringing Ertz back, or would you try to find somebody a little more dynamic for that tight end one role? I know you're such a proponent of being able to block as well, and Ertz does a pretty good job in that regard.
Yeah, I'd take him. I'd sign him again. It's better to have a bird in hand, right? I think you got to have him, and then hopefully, you know, you get another year with Ben Snott. He's progressed a little bit, and then you got to figure out what you're going to do with Bates, you know, if you re-sign him. I'm really big on the tight end position. I don't like going into the draft saying, okay, let's get a tight end in the fourth or sixth round. It ain't going to happen. I mean, you're not going to replace Zach Ertz with a fourth-round tight end from Central Michigan. It's not going to happen. You got to have a veteran tight end there that knows how to block and run the routes, be Jaden Daniels' security blanket. I know he won't separate like he used to, but he was pretty productive last year. I would make sure they sign him. And then if you get a guy in a draft to compete with Sanat and play with Sanat and maybe develop under Zach Ertz for next year or the year after, I'm all for that. But I don't think you're going to get anybody in a third, fourth, fifth round that's better than Zach Ertz.
Where does Ben Sinnott fit for you? Like, I thought, given the preseason and the body, skill set, how physical he was, I'm going, as the season progresses, we'll see more and more of him, and we just didn't. He caught a fake punt in the playoffs, but that was about it. Where does he fit for you kind of in your grand tight end plan?
Yeah, he's sight unseen for me, so I don't know. I know he was very productive at K-State, and, you know, he looked good in the preseason, and, you know, I don't know. I think he might just need some time. You know, like I said before, this position is a very hard position to play. You know, you got to learn all the run blocking, all the motion, all the routes. And it's you got to be a very smart, intellectual guy and physical. And you got to have the knowledge to know when to sit down in zones and when to run away from man coverage and all that stuff. And Zach, despite his slowing down a little bit, knows all that stuff. And so not hopefully he's learning it and can eventually become like Zach Ertz. But they need another one. But I would seriously signed Zach Ertz to make sure they had him in the building before they just gave up on him and said, okay, Ben, it's your team right now. You know, I don't know if he's ready for that yet.
The voice of Jay Gruden with us here on Grant and Danny. Now, you were head coach in the NFL during an era where the importance of running back subsided a little bit and the value at the position in terms of what those guys made fell off as well. There was a decline. I mean, you were plugging in guys like Rob Kelly, who were undrafted at times to start. We just saw today Saquon Barkley get a 2-year deal for $40+ million, $20 million per year from the Eagles. What do you think of that?
Well, I think guys like that deserve it. You know, there's not many guys that really can do a third, three down back type thing and have that much of an impact on an offense. There's few and far between. There's a lot of guys that can, if you just change uniforms, they'll be productive. You know, I think that's why the running back market was probably not as, you know, you weren't getting as much money because there's so many guys that could do the role, you know, like you mentioned, Rob Kelly. I mean, he averaged 4.5 yards a carry for us. He did some pretty good things before he got hurt. And a lot of teams have that type of guy on their team. And you look at the draft this year, hell, there's 10 or 12 of them that you feel like you'd come in and maybe be a, you know, a change of pace back. I mean, you got this Tootin guy from Virginia Tech. You got Jaden Blue from Texas. You got Henderson from Ohio State. You got Judkins from Ohio State. You got Mari Hampton from North Carolina. You know, you got a lot of guys out there that could come in here and compete for that, you know, change of pace type back or your first and second down back. But not many of them have the explosive and the home run ability as Saquon Barkley. That's why he's getting paid like that.
The Commanders don't have a fourth or fifth round pick right now, and maybe that'd be RB range for some of what you're talking about in terms of these speed backs. But how would you try to address that where it sounds like you're like me, you want a home run hitter in the backfield?
Yeah, they're hard to find, but there are some guys you might be able to get later on that have that ability that can really run and give you something. It just depends on what they're going to do with Austin Eckler. I don't know if he's under contract, I believe. So I think they still have B-Rob and Austin Eckler. At least they have a starting point right now. I don't think McNichols will re-sign. So they get another young guy that can come in and compete, whether it's a sixth or seventh round or third round, whatever it might be. I think they'll find a guy that can do that. I just don't think they're going to find a guy of that's going to be Saquon Barkley status. But they're still going to be good enough guys that can be productive in this offense. And B-Rob, you know, he did some good things early in here. He kind of fell off at the end. And Austin was doing really good until he got hurt. So those two guys together as 1-2 is not a bad combo to have starting off, and then you add another one in the draft.
Jay, I thought the offensive line was fine for the most part this past year. You mentioned B-Rob kind of falling off. I think part of that was run blocking maybe wasn't as good second half of the year for whatever reason. I want to do better than fine, though. Kind of give me your assessment and who might be, you know, due for an upgrade.
Yeah, that's a tough call because you're right. Early in the season, I thought they played extremely well. I thought they played better than they were on paper. On paper, they're a pretty average line, especially when you throw in a rookie left tackle, you know, and you know, so I don't know. And then, but Cosby's injury concerns me a little bit. I think they're going to have to upgrade there. And then they got the side of Brandon Coleman, a long-term option for him, a left tackle. Are they going to go out and get one in free agency? Are they going to try out spend and get Ronnie Stanley or somebody like that at left tackle and then move him to guard? And then what are you going to do with Algretti? You know, so they got some issues they got to figure out. I think they have a very good line coach and run game coordinators and all that stuff. And Dan Quinn has a pretty good pulse on him. But I think from a starting core principle, those guys really played well together at times last year. So it's not the end of the world if they don't get a free agent, but they do to need to upgrade a draft, maybe first or second round, try to get a guy to come in here and play.
Did you see enough from Coleman to think he could be a left tackle?
Yeah, I think he played pretty well. You know, really, you just got to figure, you know, are these the guys that can compete and eventually overtake Philadelphia, their defensive line? You know what I mean? Those are the guys you got to really block. Are they good enough to play against Micah Parsons and the rest of these guys for the Giants, Dexter Lawrence? And you just got to make sure how they competed against those guys. Watch the tape. And did they hold up against the best players in the National Football League? And if not, if you had to give them help all the time, then you got to look to upgrade. But yeah, I haven't really dove that deep into it, but I was impressed with the way they played throughout the season. They did get the NFC Championship game because they played pretty damn good.
Jay, quarterback news today. The Vikings are not going to be tagging Sam Darnold, which makes it sound like he's just going to walk into free agency. I have a hard time not viewing this as hitting the lottery and then not cashing the ticket. I mean, I know that he collapsed down the stretch, but the guy just threw 35 tutties and 12 picks and went for 4,300 yards. I don't know, man. I think I got to tag him and try to trade him or do something other than just say, hey, good season. We'll see you next time. They're losing him for nothing. And I'm talking to a guy who saw the Cousins thing play out here. But
the same thing. Yeah. Same thing with Cousins, right? Same exact thing. Kirk had a great year. We went to the playoffs and lost to the Packers in 1 year. And then next year, I think we're a game away. We lost to the Giants or whatever. And then next thing you know, he's gone. And we're scratching our ass. So, yeah, you know, I think that they have somebody in the building, though, that they feel really good about, J.J. McCarthy. We did not have that at the time. So there's a big difference there. And ended up training for Alex Smith, which, you know, he was pretty good until he broke his leg in half. But, I don't know. I'm not there. I think Sam had a really good year, but I think they must really feel good about J.J. McCarthy, despite him missing the entire season and not practicing at all. He must have really done a hell of a job in training camp and in the preseason for them to make this move.
Is there a fit for Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Giants would be a great fit for him because Daboll's got to win right now. They got Malik Nabers. They got a pretty good running game. They get another receiver in a draft. Maybe, you know, upgrade their offensive line a little bit. And that way they can take their high draft pick and pick somebody like Travis Hunter, somebody really, really good that can really help them. So I think they're still a team out there for him. Maybe it's the Raiders. Yeah, because I'm not convinced of the quarterbacks in this draft, personally. I'm not. I think Cam Ward's pretty good. I'm not convinced Shedeur Sanders is going to come in and light it up on Sundays. I'm really not. And Jackson Dart, him either. So I think a veteran guy like Sam or Aaron Rodgers would really help somebody out.
So Ward's definitely your number one in this class. What worries you about Sanders? Is it just him holding the ball, or what don't you like?
Yeah, I think, he's an accurate guy. I just think it's down the field. His arm strength concerns me a little bit. He holds the ball a little bit too much. And I don't know, prima donna type guy. I don't know, just something's just not right there for me. Something's not right, Danny. I can't put my hand on it, Grant. I just don't know what the hell it is. But I just don't think he's ready year one.
That's been the sentiment all of a sudden, right? It's turned into that. I don't know when the worm turned. Maybe it was the combine. Who knows if it's disinformation in this lying season?
Watch the BYU game at the end of the year. Yeah. I mean, when he's supposed to be playing at his best, he's horrible. He wasn't very good. And he had some pressure. He didn't know the pressure was coming. I like to watch guys as the season goes on. I like to think they get better and have a mastery of the offense. And they were atrocious. So I don't know. Maybe it's the offensive coordinator. Maybe it's the offensive line. Can't put it all on the quarterback. I know that. But I was just disappointed in the way he played late in the season when chips were on the line.
Jay, we appreciate you. Thanks so much for a few minutes, man. Enjoy what's left of the day.
You got it. Hey, it's my birthday, by the way, man. You guys need to wish me happy birthday?
Oh, is it your birthday, dude? Jay?
Yeah, 58 years old, man. I ended up taking a nap today for the first time.
That's awesome.
Wow, that's awesome. Time. 58.
That's awesome.
So what are you anticipating in the year 58, like changing, other than death. More pain in the morning when you wake up?
Death, probably. I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Let's try to
that's,
avoid that.
That's this year, buddy? Hope not.
Let's stave it off for another year or two. What do you say?
All right, thank you, guys.
Thanks,
see
Jay.
You, bro. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, man.
Let's go.
That is
Jay
cool.
Gruden's birthday.
How about that? Jay Gruden's
huh?
birthday.
What do you get Jay for a birthday present?
Something golf related. A new head cover, a new towel, something where you could play golf easier.
New golf bag.
Yeah, something like that.
This is kind of what comes with having a rookie at that position, but he has been really good.
Pressure from Hendrickson, and he finally got there. 27, protected for the moment, and that moment is gone. Trey Hendrickson comes in.
That's Joe Buck and Mike Tirico on the call for ESPN and NBC, respectively, this year. Trey Hendrickson getting to the quarterback, something he's done a whole lot of. 35 sacks the last 2 years. That's 35 sacks. 17.5 each of the last two seasons. Led the NFL in sacks for Cincinnati. Now, people sleep. He was at the Saints for 4 years before he was in Cincinnati for 4 years. But he was a really old rookie, and I didn't know that. So he is actually 30 years old. He'll turn 31 at the end of next season in December. So I actually would have thought he was 28, but I'm wrong. He's 30. He was a 23-year-old rookie.
Yeah, he had that breakout season his final year and his walk year with the Saints. And I think a lot of people were kind of going, yeah, okay, buddy. I'm sure that's not real. Cincinnati took a leap and were rewarded. 14, 8 down year, but 17.5 each of the last two seasons. A whole mess of sacks for Cincinnati. 57 sacks over 4 years. That is cleaning up.
Now, he is due to become one of the highest-paid pass rushers in the NFL. We just saw Max Crosby get an amount of money that obviously Trey Hendrickson is not going to get, but resetting the market to some extent for a guy who is rushing the quarterback off the edge. Hendrickson's made 4 straight Pro Bowls. He finally made first team All-Pro. He finished 2nd in the Defensive Player of the Year chase with Crosby not 100% healthy, ahead of him this past season. And he hit the quarterback 36 times.
Mm.
36 is a ridiculous number. I'm going to give you guys just a couple of comps so that you can make that work in your head. Dante Fowler, the best pass rusher here, who had 10.5 sacks, had 14 hits on the quarterback this year. Dorrance Armstrong, who Washington paid about $10 million a year to come in from Dallas to be their top defensive end this year, had 14 hits on the quarterback. Trey Hendrickson, this past season, hit the quarterback 36 times.
So those are, those
basically
are
like the combined total of Washington's 4 rushers.
And that's what I usually consider. So one of the things that I look at an awful lot when we talk about pass rushing is quarterback hits, because that means, are you in the neighborhood? And whether you got the sack or not, the process was there. You beat your guy, you're in the backfield, you touch the quarterback. Sometimes it's an extra beat and he holds the ball and you get a sack. Other times you go, what's wrong with John Allen? Why didn't he only have 3 sacks? Well, you get 20-some quarterback hits that year. You replay it again, he'd have 8 or 9, and that's what happens the following year. So usually, you look at some of the league leaders, and they're in the mid-20s. This year, he would have led the NFL in almost any other season, but Zach Allen in Denver had 40 quarterback hits, which is astounding, which is ridiculous for a guy, again, that only had 8.5 sacks. So the point of the dude's story is, this is a consistent, winning pass rusher. Not quite on the level of that Myles Garrett, even Max Crosby, every play is ruining everything for you, but as consistent and workmanlike a technician as they come, like, that is an effective pass rusher that I was always wondering the whole time. We're trying to do a long-term deal for Ja'Marr Chase. We really want to do a long-term deal for T. Higgins. How are they going to pay everybody? I think here's the answer. They're not.
Yeah, I use PFF for counting stats, pressures and things like that more than anything else. Their grades can be helpful, but are subjective. And so when you start talking about those, I think sometimes people start covering their ears and don't want to, you know, hear what you have to say. But I love the counting stats on pressures, and this guy has lived among the top of the league for the last couple of seasons. Now, 30 is probably the new 28 in terms of available players and age, in the sense that at that position, you can age pretty well. We've seen guys like Bruce Smith or, you know, Reggie White or others, you know, play deep into their 30s and have some success. I don't think it's the end of the world, like we talked about, if Joey Bosa had a more healthful history, or even Khalil Mack, who had a 17-sack season at 32 or 33. It's not crazy to see a guy have a really strong season with production into his 30s. So Hendrickson is someone I would be interested in, but this is big game hunting. This would cost draft picks. This would cost a massive cap number. No, this would be your move of the offseason and maybe your move of a couple of offseasons. And do you want to put all those eggs in that basket? Again, 35 sacks over 2 years ain't nothing. You want to look for a 17.5 sack season in Washington's history? You're going all the way back to Dexter Manley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those numbers don't exist in this organization's modern history. Nobody's done it. So he's the real deal. He's a great player. And it's not like it's just sacks, as we're pointing out. It's TFLs. He had 35 the last 2 years. It's hitting the quarterback.
Pressures,
it's constant
the whole thing.
Pressures. Yeah. Like, he is a real legitimate pass rusher. If you look at total pressures this past season, he was not at the top of the board among the edges, but he was right there below the number one spot. So, color me very intrigued, Danny.
Yeah, Pro Football Reference, for example, has him at number one. Pro Football Focus might have him at 2 or 3. The point is, that's the company he's in. Effective pass rusher. There's no other way around that, right?
Jared Verse of the Rams, 1 at 89. Jonathan Greenard of the Vikings, 84. Trey Hendrickson, 3rd, 83, same as Myles Garrett in terms of the number of times he pressured the quarterback. I want to dive in and try to find in the break here how often he's doubled and chipped, because while Sam Hubbard, who just retired, was a really good D tackle, he was a little bit of a one-man wrecking crew in terms of, you know, all-pro talent on that defensive front. They've, you know, brought in DJ Reader, and they've had some different guys over the years that have come and gone. But for the most part, I would imagine he's getting to work occasionally against some doubles and getting chipped.
You think so?
And he's still putting up those numbers, which is the sign of a pretty elite player.
Yeah, and this is, again, an offense and a team that was behind a lot. They were, you know, losing and slinging it and throwing it all over the place. They couldn't stop anybody. And you want to blame him for that? They had a hand in a bad defense? Sure, I'm happy to have that conversation too. But, you know, think about how many times you're trailing and teams are running on you and you're still putting up those kind of pass rushing totals. That's usually reserved to me for, like, that Dwight Freeney role where, Dwight, do not play the run. We don't care. We're going to have a lead, and they're going to be throwing it, get after the quarterback, and you can just get upfield most of the time. That's usually what you have to do to get to 17.5 sacks. You can play honest and play straight and play true and get 10 if you're pretty good, but to get to 17.5, you usually have to cheat the process a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to stay at home on this run. I might bite on this play fake because the next time I'll be upfield and I'll be able to, you know, to make the tackle in the backfield. You don't have to play as assignment sound, but to be at 17.5, given the fact that they're probably trailing a whole bunch and teams are running, that's even more impressive to me.
Trey Hendrickson's going to want to get paid. This is why he's become available and why the report is that the Bengals are telling him to go get money, because they just tagged T. Higgins, who they're keeping around at an expensive rate. It's the second tag, so it's 120% of what he got last year. And they got to sign Chase. They can't pay Chase long-term and tag Higgins with Burrow already having broken the bank, and also pay Hendrickson. So they're also a little bit of a fun experiment here, in my opinion, in terms of paying all of their guys on offense and appeasing their quarterback who says, I'm not choosing between my two favorite receivers. You're keeping both of them. Because Burrow came out, and I mean, he really took it to the front office publicly in a press conference and said, prove it to me. You know, show me how serious you are. I want Higgins and I want Chase to stay. And the easy follow-up is, so you don't want Trey Hendrickson then, right? Is that what you're saying?
Is that what you're saying?
The defensive end with the 17.5 sacks. But you can't pay everybody. That's where they are. This past year, 1 year, $21 million was basically what he signed. So he, as an extension, so he's now on the books for $18.6 million this season. I'd have to look into if he was traded what the cap number would be. But no wonder why that guy wants to get paid. He just watched Max Crosby get what he
got.
That
might have been an accelerant, you would think.
And he's making less than $19 million with 1 year left on his deal. In terms of guaranteed money, he's going, hey, agent.
Hello.
We need to go get 100 plus mil and guarantee $55 million of it to me right here and right now. Bengals said no? Fine. Then we'll go somewhere else.
You are Grant Peters. Great jawline, incredible hair. You look awesome on camera. You've already answered questions. You've told every reporter that's a great question. Use their first name every time because you have a high EQ. Somebody in private asks you, hey, Grant Peters, come on, man. How far are you willing to go to sign Trey Hendrickson? What's the max deal you'd offer? Best and final. What is it?
Contract-wise?
Contract-wise.
I mean, I would make him one of the highest paid defensive ends in the NFL.
Can there be a three in front of it to start? AAV?
Sure. I don't think there would be. I don't think I would do that. But, I mean, if that's what it takes, yeah, go get a great football player. Here's what's interesting. We keep talking about age. And, like, Joey Bosa is basically the same age as him, and I'm going, he's old. Well, he gets hurt all the time. Hendrickson's been healthy. But because the cap keeps going up and up and up and up and up, teams are not allowing these free agents to walk to the same extent. So a lot of times when guys shake free, it's in this way. It's they're now available for trade because I've paid too many guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not after their first contract at 26 years old anymore. So we will have to recalibrate a little bit of normalcy in terms of like what you expect from the age of a player coming in here. If you're looking for a 26-year-old who can get you 14 sacks, that guy's probably not coming available
That's
in
right.
this era of football. It's probably going to be a 30-year-old, or there's going to be some baggage. I can get you 12 sacks, but I'm coming off an ACL. I can get you 14 sacks, but I can't play the run. I can get you 13 sacks, but I've only played 9 games in the last 2 years. That kind of stuff is going to be happening more and more and more.
I think so.
Because teams are just not letting their own guys walk.
Especially at premium spots, right? That's the, obviously, quarterback, but then you go wide out, offensive tackle, defensive end slash pass rusher, havoc wreaker, and to a degree, cornerback. Although the cornerback market's pretty decent this year. But this is one of the premium ones. I mean, just look at how these guys have gotten paid over the years. Max Crosby just signed the richest non-quarterback deal in sports history. Or not sports, football history. So there you go. I mean, that's the new paradigm. So you've got it. Something exceptional has to happen. And in this case, it looks like it has with Burrow, Higgins, and Chase. That's your triumvirate. So they're going to have to figure out a way to build the team probably without some of these other high-priced stars that might be on the market here before too long.
Here's what I would do. I would offer him a 4-year extension at $26 million a year. $104 million. And I think that would get it done. That's what Montez Sweat was looking for, if you remember. And because he's not in his 27, 28 seasons, you know, you're 30. You're going to turn 31 this football season. I think a 4-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
With that kind of money, $104 million, and I'd be willing possibly to guarantee him the first 3 years of the deal or close to it. Like instead of just...
You're like a $75 million in guarantees?
Yeah, instead of like $52 million, I'll guarantee you close to 70, like a $65, $67 million, so that you know you're going to probably be here for 3 years. I don't know why that wouldn't get it done. I would go for at 27 if I had to, $28 million. My ceiling's probably 28. Like you say, would I do 30? No, probably not. I don't think I would need to. But in the 25 to 27 range, I think is the sweet spot. And if the market's really rich, because Max Crosby might have just ruined everything for everybody, you know, okay, maybe 26, 28, something like that. But I'd try to avoid $30 million a year. But you got to take advantage of this quarterback. Who was it that said that to us yesterday? Was it Charles Davis? I think it was CD at the end of the show yesterday when we were asking him about wide receivers. hey, they've got Debo in the fold now. Would you keep pushing? Do you think they need another wideout? He's like, yeah, of course. Do what you can. You got the quarterback, man. Go try to win a title. And by the way, we keep asking this old, young, like, what should they be looking for? Are we okay with it? They don't seem to really go young in free agency. The monster under the bed here a little bit. What's a better reference than that? The scary thing nobody talks about, I think, sometimes with this team, there's not that much really, really good young talent because of how bad the drafts were.
This is the point that I'm hammering, yeah.
I'm not going full House of Cards here, okay? But you have built this thing. It's kind of a papier-mâché build that Jaden Daniels is, like, holding up with his arms and legs in all directions. And if he is Mahomes, Burrow, one of those guys, mm-hmm. Allen, Lamar, then nothing matters and you'll just be good every year and no one needs to. We could just stop doing the show. Let's talk about the Caps or the Nats because they're always going to be good. But the young talent, when you compare it to the Green Bays and the Detroits and the Minnesotas, I'm thinking playoff teams from last year, and Philly or whoever, it's not the same.
No, it's not.
So do you try to go solidify that, which is a multi-year project, or do you just push some chips in a little bit and go, we accidentally got here. Let's just keep going this direction until the bottom falls out.
Yeah, this is kind of the drum I've been beating, I would say, when some of these more veteran guys come up. And I don't want to all the time just go, oh, he's 33, bring him over. You don't want to just keep doing that because, as you said, it's a hamster wheel, kind of a dead-end road for a short-term thing. It's by its nature short-term when you sign someone to a one-year deal or a two-year deal or whatever. But that's point one. But then column two is, the window is open. I have so little young talent already in-house.
Thanks, Ron.
I've got to fill it somewhere. And all the Martys, fare thee well. I hope you get great gigs. But just stop influencing who's on my roster, please, and thank you.
Let's look for young stars other than Daniels on this football team. I'm just looking at, I'm rattling off the starters on the depth chart. McLaurin, Samuel, Zacchaeus, Coleman, Allegretti, Biadasz, Cosme, Wiley, Ertz, Daniels, B-Rob. I mean, Daniels is the only one on offense.
Mm-hmm.
Young is what? Sub-27? 26 isn't young, but I'd even grant that at this point. That's like going into your second contract age. I'm not putting Cosme on that list after last year coming off an ACL. Are you?
No.
Like, if we're talking studs, he's good. I don't know if he's a stud. Fowler, Payne, Allen, Armstrong, Luvu. I'll kick Allen off and put Newton in, who I like, but isn't on that level yet. Luvu's really, really good. I would say he's a stud. He's not young. You know how old Frankie Luvu is?
28.
I'll take the over on that. What's Frankie's age, right? He turns 29 this season, I guess, right? I mean, that's not a young stud. Igbinoghene, Lattimore, Quan Martin is a really good player at safety. Stud? I don't think so.
Nice player. But the point stands.
So Jaden Daniels is... How about Sanristil?
There you go.
I'll give you Mikey Sanristil as a true linchpin, building block, standout young kid on his first contract. That's two. Are we missing anybody?
No. Nobody that you'd go star. I mean, they have players that fit that bill, but that's kind of the point here, is you need that, and let's get that. Everyone should be in favor of finding that, but you only have so many draft selections. There's only so many free agents, and your point about guys, leaking free at 25, 26 in the prime of their careers and being a dramatic talent upgrade, I don't know how many of those guys they're going to be at premium spots.
Just how big of a deal is the end of the Masson dispute for the Washington Nationals? 20-plus years this news has been in the making that the Nats, who have never controlled their TV rights but always wanted to, have a resolution in place with the Orioles. Agreement the two teams had all along, had the O's hold in the Nats' purse strings on the TV deal. And now it's been resolved once and for all. The Nats will play a final year of games on Masson in 2025 and then hit free agency to go find a new TV home, whether that's at Monumental Sports Network in town where they can make the money off of the deal themselves without the Orioles getting involved, or maybe Major League Baseball continues to dip its finger into the pie. They've been doing that with the clubs that have had RSN issues all over the sport. But Danny, it's hard to not think about this as just an absolute game changer for this organization. Based on how it's been sold to us over the years from the club, from ownership, from the organization, in terms of being so limiting, so debilitating. Like, you can't say for 20 years, this is the noose wrapped around your neck. This is what keeps you from being and what you want to be. This is, and they haven't come out and said it verbally, but they've floated that. Enough reporters have done that bidding that it's obviously been something that is preventative and nerve-wracking for them. They're afraid to go spend money because they don't feel like they've got enough coming in. Well, if that's the case, this should all change moving forward. At the least, let's say they want to keep owning the team. They spend more. There's a better TV network broadcasting their games, and you can start streaming Nats games direct to consumer, which would be amazing. That's the worst case of all of this.
That's right.
The best case is either a sale, that they're back on the market, or this ownership group just says, all right, we're going to be making $20 million a year, because the report from Forbes today is now they're looking to sell their stadium rights. Now they're looking to put a sponsor on their jersey. That $20 million plus $200-plus million that they're getting in the resolution of this deal, plus now having their own TV deal where they're making money. Let's go sign some players and be a real-life Major League Baseball player again.
Yeah, with operating cash coming in. I mean, this it's everyone likes to say, like, they're billionaires. So what's supposed to happen is they're going to go into their personal checking account and start writing checks for their business? That's never been realistic. The business is supposed to sustain and take care of itself. Operating cash will be coming in. You're doing the same thing you were doing before. Let's say you and I are doing a radio show. If all of a sudden sponsorship levels go up by $10 million, $20 million, $30 million, the station, everybody feels it. It's good for everyone, right? You're taking off those. It's like trying to run a 100-meter race with lead underpants on while someone's pushing you in the opposite direction. We're trying to keep up with some of the haves in this league. So, yeah, I to that degree, I've always had a little bit of empathy there. Now, again, it doesn't absolve a lot of the behavior from this ownership group and you know, by extension, the organization. But it explains some of it, right? And now you're removing that obstacle. I mean, this again, is a path to normalcy. And the people I'm happiest for, honestly, in all this are the fans. Like, we, as baseball was trying to be reintroduced here, you know, after this giant gap that happened when the Senators left in the 70s, you missed generations of baseball fans. We either gave up on it altogether, went to Baltimore, or something in between. Grandfathers take fathers, you take sons and daughters and the whole nine yards. You need to grow up in having all the right stuff to really introduce this thing. You get used to the ebbs and flows, to the ups and downs, to the your team ramps up, gets really good, takes a shot, then it gets bad, and you kind of ride the roller coaster again. We've been robbed of those things in a lot of ways in terms of the coverage. A real, honest-to-God flagship baseball network should be a prerequisite. It should be normal and not something that's bare bones more so every year that didn't send people on the road immediately after COVID for live broadcasts and had technical issues. That's not what should be happening. It should be the opposite of that. And now this opens the path to that. And my hope is that everybody gets to experience what it's like. If you've lived in other cities, you know. When you turn on that network that's dedicated to that baseball organization, yeah, it's a little bit of the feel-good propaganda for a 100-loss team, but you're getting to know the players. Well, you're getting those deep dives.
Two things. First, I'm glad you said that, and I'm not trying to be a jerk to you, but there is a little bit of double talk from a lot of people, and I'm going to throw you into the mix here, because people make fun of Monumental all the time, who do this with their network.
Sure.
Right? Now, I happen to be a part of their Capitals coverage, so I will just acknowledge my
Involvement,
yeah. You know, in this. But the Capitals are really good, and I have never once been told to pull a punch. I used to be on pre and post every single night. We would do pre, post for face-off and overtime. They don't do those shows anymore. They're just post-COVID. They have not had as much programming around the games and spent the same amount. But I now do these altcasts. And I mean, we're talking about 7, 8, 9 games or whatever it is a year that I'll end up doing this year, maybe 10 games. So it's not like I'm heavily involved and I'm not an employee necessarily. They bring me in from outside. But nobody tells me, we can't say that. You can't say that. Oh, you shouldn't be mean about this player or that player. I mean, we were on the altcast the other day, me and Tariq El-Bashir, who is actually an employee of Monumental, and we're going through all the players and who could be traded and who's had a disappointed year and they got to get more out of Mangiapane, and nobody's getting in my ear saying don't say that. I will say that the Wizards, who are terrible as a team, you're going to get a lot more of what feels like that programming, and I'm not blaming the guys that do it. My buddies, you know, whether it's Chris Miller or Wes Hall or Drew Gooden or Grievous Vasquez or anybody, you know, Consor.
Sure.
But on your own network, like, I'm a Wizards fan. I don't want to tune in and hear them bashed all the time. But you are also kind of, at times, they just lost by 20, and it's like, can you believe this guy scored 11 points? How amazing is that? The cool thing with getting to cover the Capitals, and this is where I'm lucky, they've pretty much been awesome all along. There's not a whole lot of pulling punches when the team's making the playoffs every year, Ovi's hunting down Gretzky. But I say all this to say, they take some flack for that, and I do think there is an acknowledgement with the Nats that it would be awesome to have more of that. And it's the same people sometimes. It's like, so you want the programming and you want to hear about your team, but then we have that for the Caps and the Wiz, and people are like, oh, I hate the in-house stuff that's owned by the team. And you see what I'm saying?
Like, that's fair enough. But my point is, like, the broadcast rights, like, if the Nats own it, I don't love that. But a normal network, let's say it's a TV network.
So you want the perfect world of, like,
well, I love that.
Yes, that was not a good example because the Yankees are involved. But yeah, but and it's funny, we can't even think of them because it's no longer the case.
Right, it's not normal, and I understand that. Yeah. I mean, the thing that's perfect is, I don't know that that's going to exist
anymore.
Bygone
era. And the next best thing is the team's owning it.
Or the next best thing is something. Yes. Not Ian Desmond had two hits in 2013 on a regular random regular season game, and Nats Classic in the offseason. There should be programming.
My point is always, who's spending money?
Right.
That's who I want owning things. Mm-hmm. You've got, right now, as an example, Masson has cut back on pregame and postgame. They don't really have official pregame and postgame shows. Now, they do 10 or 12 minutes beforehand, and it works the same way, but it's whoever's calling play-by-play or Colco or whatever, and they do 10 minutes to get you ready for first pitch, and then after, you know, the sideline reporter or the play-by-play guy will go through the highlights. It's basically like a shorter, non-official pre and post, mm-hmm. right? Whereas on Monumental, they've got Alan May and Alexa Landis, and you got 35, 40 minutes of postgame, and you're getting your half hour of pregame, and then they're trying these alt casts, and they are trying things.
Yes.
Like, I like that. I understand that people don't want the teams owning it. I totally get that. But what I care about is, like, who is investing energy, time, and effort? But to this point, we have never had a network that actually just promoted the Nationals and tried to grow fandom.
Yep.
It would be amazing to finally have that, and I think we will. And that's not even at the top of my priority list. I guess my number one priority, because it's so easy and should have been done 10 years ago, is give me direct-to-consumer packaging.
Yes.
I, right now, this moment, don't know how I'm going to watch their games this year. I have cut the cord once and for all after years and years of pausing DirecTV, then bringing it back, then pausing it, then bringing it back. As of this moment, I don't have DirecTV. Do I bring it back? I guess it's possible I could do that. I don't want to do that. I have YouTube TV right now. I cannot get Nationals games. I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I've got to figure something out. Mm-hmm. What should happen is I should just be able to pay $400 or whatever the hell you want me to. I will pay it.
Whatever you want me to do.
Let me know where to go, how far I got to drive, and how I sign up, because I will do it, and just get your games available on an app on my TV. They don't have that right now.
That's right.
They're one of the only teams in the sport that doesn't. They will next year. You know who has that is Monumental. You know who has that is almost every network that's worth it.
And that's kind of the point. All I want is better. I mean, my utopia would be amazing. I know that's not realistic anymore because that model is all but gone. My point is, I can't do the Nats are at spring training right now, and there's no spring training coverage content on that television network. There's none. You can't get the games, which is outrageous.
That's such a good point.
One a month.
What is our spring training television coverage?
Again, it's a special occasion when it happens. That's outrageous! It's outrageous! Outrageous!
It's becoming more and more the norm everywhere, for the record.
Where is my really bad here. Yeah, where is my here's who's standing out at camp. Here's my nightly Nats report. Here's the spring training daily diary. This is who threw today. This is why. This is the schedule. This is who's in line to start opening day. They don't have the normal run of things to get people interested. There's roughly half the subscribers to Masson there were 5 years ago. Half. It's down from 6 million down to less than 3 million at this point. It ain't trending in the right direction, and there's a reason for it, right? You don't do that stuff. This is a growing time when you're trying to get kids and future generations of fans that will fill your coffers invested, and there's a shrinking. The timing sucks for them to get their own network now when the RSNs are dying, but this is still such a great opportunity. Just if it's normal behavior, you're going to do so much more for this organization.
Just give me the games on streams. Yes. That's what I'm asking for. But the possibilities are way bigger than that. Richard's in Manassas. What's up, Richard?
Hey, how you guys doing? Grant, you're pretty in tune with MLB. I'm curious, and I know this has just happened, but is there any immediate whispering about maybe Ted pushing all in so he can get them part of Monumental?
Well, look, it's a game changer in that regard, too. The question is, will the learners want to sell or not? Are they fully locked back in on owning this team to the point where they do not want to sell, or will they be interested in going back to market? One of the hurdles for Ted Leonsis buying the team in the past was, as long as the Masson deal existed, his interest was going to be limited, in my opinion, because he owns Monumental Sports. He doesn't want the games on Masson. He wants the games on Monumental Sports. Well, now he will have that ability as an owner, and so his interest would be far greater, I would imagine. How much more money would he offer than what didn't get it done in 2022? Can't answer that. Are the learners willing to sell? That's the big question, in my opinion. Right. That's the couple billion dollar question at this point. But the other thing I would say in terms of Leonsis is, do you want to own the team if you can just get the TV rights without owning the team? I don't know about
that. That's a great question.
With the Wizards, with the Capitals, with the Mystics, with all those teams, he's got all of it and both. And I think you want that. You want the rights and the team and the network. And I would imagine that would be his preference. But if it's super complicated or they make it really hard, when do you throw your hands up and say, okay, well, we'll just air all the games and use it as a functional, operational way to do more and give our consumers more, even if I don't have the team? But yeah, is there a better chance that Ted Leonsis would try to buy them again today than a week ago? In my opinion, the answer to that's categorically yes.
I would say so. Yeah, well, there's no clarity. How can you offer the max at what the market might dictate when you have no idea? If you're basically going, you own the team and you inherit this legal battle that will never die. Enjoy that.